Wow.
Really nasty.
I have forgotten your name. I remember you, but I'm
waiting for Annihilation to start the recording. We're ready?
Yep.
Call meeting
is
order.
Is Doug in yet?
Doug, are you there?
Not yet.
Not yet, but it just hit 11:30. I'll call his cell phone, see if he's going to answer or call in.
It's only just 30.
Oh, there he is.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, is that Arnie?
It's Arnie. I was just calling you on your cell phone. I said he's not answering. It's like, uh-oh.
Yeah, sorry, just got off another conference call, so I apologize.
That's okay, no big deal. I was just calling to see if you were going to make it.
I'm here.
Lee is on also.
Hey, Lee.
So, the reason we're trying to pull this together is because of the latest ordinance that was just passed by City Council. And I have a few concerns about it that they're breaking an IRS rule by dictating to us an expected rate of return, and then I have some issues where they want to commingle funds at two different rates of return, and we don't really have good software or any software to track this. And I went to the council meeting to tell them that it was illegal what they were doing, and they chose not to proceed with it. So now we're engaging with you, Lee, to have you step up and start dealing with this portion of it.
Okay, well, as you know, it's my position. I think Doug agrees. I'd be interested in his input, but as you and I discussed on it before you went to a council meeting, I interpret 401A25 in the Internal Revenue Code as providing that the actuarial assumption should be stated in a way that's not subject to employer discretion, and if all the city has to do is just change the ordinance, then that's all within their authority to do it, then I think it violates that provision. And all of the assumptions and methodology, also if we look to the responsibilities of the board under Chapter 112, lie within the purview of the board. Do you have anything to add to that, Doug?
No, I'm in exact concurrence. It was one of the first things that red flagged me when I saw this proposed ordinance back in July, mandating of assumptions. So I have the same concerns, Lee.
How long has Lynn been doing this kind of stuff?
Jim Lynn?
Yeah.
She's been, used to be in various legislative committees, talking to them, going back into the early to mid-80s. So, long time. He's with a firm called Lewis Longmire, who primarily represents Ezra Calhoun. They're retained by cities. And that's how long he's been practicing in the area. I don't know how much exposure he's had to Pitcher.
Have you spoken to him?
No. No, I won't. I have not known anything until directed by the board. And the last thing I was involved with was talking with Arnie before he went to the council meeting. As far as options of what to do, has anybody spoken with the division at Management Services on this?
Well, I'm really thinking that Doug has a hook on there to go talk to Keith Brinkman, and I think that I'd like to ask Doug to go talk to him about that piece, unless, Doug, you have an issue with that.
I would, in fact, recommend that be the first step. You know, obviously, we'd like to resolve this with as little time and expense as possible, and the last resort, which obviously is always available, is a judicial proceeding, which I think is certainly beneficial to avoid from a time and expense standpoint. I don't think it's favorable for the board to end up with that type of an adversarial relationship with the city. So, again, my recommendation would be to enlist the assistance of the department, see what they have to say. What do you think, Doug?
I think that's fine. I mean, I can make it a simple request, is ask Keith with the reviewing actuary if they have any concerns regarding what appears to be a mandated use of assumptions for actuarial purposes.
But if they agree on that, I mean, they've got a pretty big club they can swing. The 112 provides that they find that the ordinance and the impact statement are not acceptable, and if it would be for this reason, they have the authority actually to withhold a sharing portion of state funds that would otherwise come to the city, so long as it's not money that's pledged to pay bond debt. So they have some significant authority here in terms of having to accept the valuation report and the ordinance.
They have stated that they received the valuation report. Is that not correct?
Received it, but not reviewed it. And this is why I'm now having this meeting, that I want to engage with him and let him know that, as I mentioned to council, this ordinance is not legal the way that it's written. And I gave them an out to strike out the 7%, and they chose not to listen to me. And this is why now we're proceeding with this meeting, to engage with our actuary and our attorney, because I gave them, just for, you know, public information, that they could have just striked the 7%, but now there's an issue that there's two different assumption rates, and they're asking us to deal with that, and we can't. We don't have the software, nor can we, nor can the city legally dictate to us what we have to have for the assumption rate. Otherwise, they're assuming the fiduciary responsibility of the plan. And this is what I explained to them, and they chose not to heed my warning. So this is the next step. This is all about the plan. We're trying to protect the plan, and to give us money from two different pension plans, as I explained to them, they also have to change the plan. They have to revise it.
And what are you claiming, that the city would no longer receive revenue from where?
State revenue share.
I'd say Chapter 112 provides that if the valuation, the actuarial valuation, is not state accepted, and then they have the authority to withhold funds that would otherwise come to the city, revenue sharing funds. Okay.
Jim Rizzo is on the line if you'd like for him to speak.
Jim, you there?
Hey, y'all. Who all's there?
The pension board, and we have two firefighters with us, and we have an employee named
Public Works,
Steve, and Alicia's here, myself.
And Lee and Doug online?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gentlemen.
How you doing, Jim?
Okay.
So, Jim, you've been long enough to hear what's going on?
I just got on about 2 minutes ago.
So you probably heard most of what I climbed on my soapbox about?
Is that Arnie?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the floor is yours if you have anything to say before we proceed.
Do you have any questions? I just got on here. Do you have any questions?
Well, our questions are about the ordinance dictating an assumption rate. And as I stated at the council meeting, IRS code 401A25 states that they can't do that. The sponsor of a program cannot be involved. And I explained to them, if they're going to commit to that 7%, then they're assuming the fiduciary responsibility of the pension.
Well, I'm not sure how to start responding to that one. 401A, Lee, you're familiar with that section of the code?
Yes.
And Doug?
Yes.
And in the history, in the context of what all that section of the code has referred to, in particular optional forms of benefit and so forth, what is your, how would you respond to Arnie?
This is Lee. I agree with Arnie. I think the way that section states, and you're familiar with it, Jim, is that assumptions that are specified shouldn't be subject to employer discretion. The employer, and there, all they need to do is enact an ordinance, and they can, in their discretion, move those rates and assumptions around, and I think that's what's prohibited.
Well, yeah, that section of the code has nothing to do with the plan of this nature. That has to do with optional forms of benefit, whether the employer can say, oh yeah, you can have it, you can have that optional form, and you can't. That's the discretion. When you mention that the employer shouldn't have and doesn't have the authority to move the benefits, that's what the employer does, and the board actually does not do that.
I agree with that.
Well, somebody did.
I didn't say anything with respect to benefits.
Yeah, somebody just said that when you can change the assumptions and move the benefits around.
I never heard the word benefit mentioned at all. All I said was the pension plan. The sponsor cannot be involved. The city is the sponsor. In order for the IRS code for it to be a qualified pension plan, the sponsor cannot be involved with the investment side of it. And that's why there's a separate pension board. Otherwise, well, city council would have to take over the pension, and they would be in two public offices at once. They couldn't do that stuff.
Yeah. Well, in this case is different than you know, virtually every other plan and board in the state.
Yeah, it is. But you're also asking to commingle funds. So how do you take a new hybrid plan and commingle funds with one expected rate of return of one amount and one of a different one? Because the ordinance covers both pension plans. And so what I'm saying is the pension ordinance plan.
There's only one pension plan here.
No, there's not. There's two pension plans. It's two different tiers out of one plan.
This is one, it's one plan.
Do you agree, Lee, it's one plan? The two tiers?
What Arnie just said, there's one plan with two different tiers of benefits.
So it's one plan with two tiers.
Right.
We got to agree to that. It's not two plans. It's one plan with two different tiers.
Correct. Okay. But you can't dictate one side of the plan and not dictate on the other side and commingle these funds. And that's the issue I have for the pension plan. That's all I'm fighting about is the pension plan itself.
What I was saying earlier is that this is very different than most other plans where... most other plans are set up to and this one too, as far as the phrase operating the plan, is that it's generally the board's responsibility to pick investment managers, approve disabilities, hire actuaries, hire attorneys, hire auditors if necessary, to operate the plan. And generally speaking, that has traditionally been and that has traditionally included adopting assumptions. In this case, the assumptions used actually move the benefits. And this is the very kind of plan that you cannot have the board setting the assumptions, because the board doesn't have the authority to to move the assumptions, and the assumptions that are used to calculate all these ratios and so forth, benefit levels, if they're under the authority of the pension board, then that gives the pension board the authority to actually move benefits.
It's our fiduciary responsibility.
Besides violating the IRS code, that would violate state statutes. So that's the reason that, well, that's one reason that we had to put the assumptions in the ordinance itself, because it is the city council, it is the elected officials who decide the benefit levels, and if they set the benefit levels in connection with the assumptions that they had also adopted. And if they move the assumptions, then the benefits move, and that's their authority, not the pension board's. So you can't have the pension board, you cannot have the pension board in a plan like this. And so don't take this and run with it with the rest of the state of Florida, or the country for that matter.
So then you want to take on the IRS with this code and say it needs to be rewritten?
The code doesn't need...
401A25 clearly states the sponsor of the pension plan cannot be involved with the assumption and the investment.
It doesn't say... No. That's all about... I don't have time to go into the history of that. I was practicing when that was adopted, and it started with a revenue ruling, and it has to do with definitely determinable, and they wanted to take away, in the private sector, Arnie, we used to go crazy in the private sector because the employer sat there, you talk about two hats, the employer decided what optional benefits would be granted and which would not. In the public sector world, it's very different. There is a very separate pension board, this came about from the private sector for the reasons I gave. And I remember when I used to do private sector business consulting more, I'm sitting there in the CFO's chair and the CEO's chair, and the CEO's office, sitting in their office, and they're deciding administrative things. They're deciding assumptions. They're deciding what people got down at what optional forms of benefit and who didn't. So, you know, that was a problem. And so this section of the code started with a revenue ruling in the early 80s that said you have to, the first was you have to put in your plan document exactly what the rule is on who gets what optional forms are available and who gets them, and what the conversion factors are. They needed the assumptions that are used to develop the conversion factors to go from one optional form to another. The IRS Congress said, well, gee, you got to put that in your plan document. It used to be, Arnie, I remember when I started in the 70s, optional form factors were not even in the ordinance, in the plan documents. They were just on somebody's desk somewhere. And so they moved, Congress said, you got to put it in the plan documents so that everybody knows what the rules are. Well, then they took a step further and put it in the Internal Revenue Code, where they said, you can't have the employer exercising discretion over who gets benefits, what optional forms of benefits, and who doesn't. If the employer wants to move the needle somewhere, they have a mechanism for that. They can adopt an amendment to the plan, and they do. So that's where that section of the code comes from. It has all to do with optional forms of benefit. And Lee, you know well, because you've been doing the plan rewrites, the technical amendments in the last couple of years. And one of the things, I disagree with what you and your colleague have been saying about that section of the code in some regard. I know you've changed your language from time to time over the last couple of years, but that's what that section of the code is about. It's all about the optional forms of benefit where they can't have discretion. So Arnie, this kind of plan is the very one, the very kind of plan that you must, because of IRS code purposes and the state of Florida purposes, that you must put the assumptions in right in the document, because, and the changing assumptions have the effect in this plan now, have the effect of changing people's benefits, and the pension board cannot be given the authority to change benefits by merely exercising their discretion on changing assumptions. That's reserved in the state of Florida to the elected officials.
So do you concur with that, Lee, or not? Are you still thinking that we're in violation of IRS?
No, I don't. I'd have to take a look forward to this kind of... But, Jim, why did you recommend this kind of a unique plan to Ocala?
Well, the reasons and the recommendations were laid out in detail in one or two of those reports we gave the council. And it had, let me give it to you in a nutshell. Council members were emphatic in articulating several objectives. The two relevant ones that relate to this is they wanted pension contributions to be more predictable, and they did not want the taxpayers bearing all the investment risk. That train, a train was out of the station and moving toward a DC plan. They were considering DC plan not just for new hires, but they were considering a DC plan even for current employees to freeze the DB plan and put everybody into a DC plan. One of the things we showed them, if they just had there was an interesting little chart you guys would appreciate. There was a If they closed the DB plan and put all new hires in the DC plan, it would take, I forget, Diane, whether it was 39 years or it was the year 2039. It was a long time before they ever had moved sharing the investment risk with the participants to the point of 50-50. Right now, they... the taxpayers and the city bear all the investment risk. And they were wanting, in a snap of a finger, for all the employees to bear all the investment risk. And we showed them, if you close the plan, that you still have a massive pension plan that has an obligation to continue to pay a lot of employees and retirees and beneficiaries pensions for many years to come. And that pension fund, they would continue to bear the investment risk for that pension fund for 20 or 30 more years, even before it got to the 50-50 point. It would take 60 years to get it all the way on the back of the participant with everybody in a DC. And that's the direction they were going. So we proposed, I think that was kind of a turning point in the whole discussion. And so they did not want to have to wait till 39 years from now to only get to a point of 50-50 sharing. So there are numerous hybrid plans being proposed all around the country right now that involve sharing investment risk with the participant in a DB plan. And so this seemed to be a good way to solve the elected officials' desire to not pull the rug out from under participants by putting them all in a DC plan. They had a lot of sympathy for the employees and the workforce as we were going through this process in the last couple years. And yet, on the other side, they wanted to get control over the costs. So So as you see how this mechanism works, there's this corridor, and the corridor gives them the comfort level that, okay, as long as we're inside the corridor, we're satisfying the design, the objective of budget predictability. And it can go outside the corridor, and that's tough. They're just going to have to pay the higher price if it goes above the corridor, and they enjoy. So there's some amount of risk and reward that is borne by the participants, and some by the city. Now it's kind of shared. So this design satisfied those two objectives, or three objectives. One is they in their hearts they wanted to keep a DB plan, but they knew they couldn't keep the kind of plan that they've had till now because of the cost and the volatility. So we designed this plan that has predictability and has investment risk sharing. And there are other, this may be unique in Florida at this point, but there's others. Wisconsin is a client of ours. It was proposed to Maine this past year. A variation on this. There's variations on this variable benefit design.
Personally,
there's several.
Go ahead.
Doug, not too input? Long.
Doug?
Yes.
Do you have any input at this point?
No, I'm primarily just listening and digesting at this point and putting everything back into the context of our impact statement. I don't have any particular input beyond this point here. It appears that, to me, it might come down just to differing sets of opinions, and we may still want, we will need a final opinion from Keith Brinkman's office. Because while I understand everything that's been discussed, in the context of it being such a unique plan, this might be the first time that the Division of Retirement come across this.
I would concur.
They've conducted their review yet, and if they're prepared to offer some feedback.
I did reach out to Keith and I forget which of their two actuaries was on the other line. Before this was adopted, and had a lengthy discussion with them on an informal basis, and you know how much, you know, informal is informal. but you know, they wrestled with all these same topics that we've been discussing here on this call, and at the end of the discussion, they said they couldn't think of any problems with going forward. So it's not like we hadn't talked to them. We did not want to do that. We did not want to go forward all the way to final reading on this thing without reaching out to the state, and we did.
Now, one of the things
I think we're back to where we started this conversation, which is if the board wants to pursue it further, I think the first step will be, as Doug suggested, that we get in touch with Jim previously did on an informal basis, get in touch with the division and discuss it with them. And depending upon where things go, we may even want to consider getting a private letter going from the IRS. I'm not saying we should or we get to that point, but I think we take it a step at a time, and I think the first step is to get with the division.
Right. So as a board,
Board wants to pursue it.
We have to have a motion on the table to give Lee his marching orders, and we all have to agree on it. If we're thinking that this is helping protect the pension plan itself.
Doug, I heard Andre say one other thing, and I want to ask the question to clarify. When he's talking about the two different tiers and the assumptions, are we thinking about, and maybe Arnie can just answer the question, so I'm sorry, but are we thinking that it's going to, that you would use 8% to calculate the prior people and this new 7% that has been? Or do you take it from the ordinance that's been adopted that you're supposed to use 7% for the entire report?
Um, don't have an absolute definitive answer to that yet. My understanding is that the 7% mandated assumption is for purposes of determining corridor.
Yes, which is the entire report.
Right. So on an annual basis, we use the 7% to rerun the study. Every year we do the valuation, we rerun the study to see if we're still within the corridor.
Well, if you use the 7% for your report that's due October 1st, it's going to throw the existing pension plan out where the city is going to owe more, because we already saw that from your assumption of the impact, that it immediately we're out of the corridor.
Not from the report that was submitted to the council. Right? The report that you submitted to council, Doug, for the actuary impact statement that we sent to Keith Brinkman, that one didn't show us out of the corridor. Is that correct?
When Doug and I talked about this, Doug, it was still inside the corridor when you did the impact statement.
At 8%?
I think the initial...
It was at 8% when he did the original plan. When you did the impact statement, it was with an 8% assumption.
Is that correct?
No, the actuarial valuation.
No, they asked
the impact,
for impact.
They had to do an impact statement. When you did the impact statement, Doug, for the council, for approval of the ordinance, did you use 8% assumption or 7%?
Doug, you there? Doug?
Did you set it for 30 minutes and they dropped off?
Lee, you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, we still got Lee.
All right. Jim, you're still there, right?
I'm here.
Doug?
Where are you?
I'll try his cell phone again.
And you ready to go get the valuation?
My assumption is he cannot do the impact statement on anything other than what he has in front of him.
So you're suggesting he should use 8% for part of the valuation and 7%.
This is my dilemma, Diane. How do we do that?
Okay. I don't think he can.
Right, and you and I know.
I think the ordinance prohibits you from doing that.
Right, but we don't have software to track this. That's one of my bigger heartaches here, is that we do not have pension software to track all this money properly.
How do we need, well that's another issue. We'll deal with that issue. I didn't know there was a problem.
As I was told, it's just logistics, right?
We were talking about assumptions a moment
software.
Ago. When your comment, Arnie, about software, are you referring to assumptions? You don't have the software to do the assumptions?
That's not our job. That's Foster and Foster who does
software.
The assumptions.
Where's that coming from?
I'm saying that
it's flat
with different investments. When we're looking for an 8% rate of return on one bit of money and 7% on the other.
We're not going to. We're looking at 7% on the whole thing.
You can't dictate to the existing pension plan, which is the employee's money. That's what I'm saying. You can't dictate that plan. Even if it's a different tier, it's the employee's money.
Okay. But that tier still exists at the old contribution rates in the old.
So you have 49 grandfathered people who are investing at one rate.
Right.
And you've got...
The 49 people, they don't invest at an interest rate.
No, they don't. But their calculations are at 8% because that's what they're grandfathered in at.
They're not grandfathered at the interest rate at all. They're a grandfather at their multiplier.
They're grandfathered with their multiplier and their benefits. Their benefits are fixed.
Yes. Yeah.
And as you said, the benefits are controlled by the interest rate. You just said that.
The future benefits of the new plan, of the new tier.
I think the issue is there's gray area between what's the first tier and what's the second tier. And are they
well, there's actually
able
like
to be
three
mixed
tiers
together
now.
Or are they not to be mixed together?
Do you follow this part?
It's all one pool.
It's all one pool and they're able to be mixed together because we spoke to Ken.
And the ordinance specifically says not only are you to use the 7%, and there's a couple other assumptions there, but let's just say 7%. Not only is the ordinance to be used for 7% to determine whether you're in or outside the corridor, but the ordinance also says that for funding the plan, in general, that the interest assumption should be 7% as well.
And my statement here is us as board members taking care of, let's just talk the existing plan. Our fiduciary responsibilities are to meet with our advisor and our money managers and give them direction to meet an assumption rate. And we've set that assumption rate for this year at 8%, and you're trying to dictate to us, no, it's got to be 7%. And I'm stating simply, that means you're taking on the fiduciary responsibility of the existing plan. We haven't started the new one. So there's a new one that's going to be semi-froze. There's 49 people who are grandfathered in to what was the existing plan that's going to get different benefits. And then you're going to start a new plan. So to me, now there are three tiers.
I think the actuary report that gets produced right now needs to be done at the 8%. Is that not correct, Jim?
No.
It needs to be done at
7%? No, the
ordinance is, it's an impact,
the ordinance is already, it's effective here shortly.
And doesn't matter that it was for last year, it's for the future. Okay. All right. 7%. Mm. Then Lee disagrees, and Lee is ready to go the next step, and you all are ready to vote on that.
When we set the interest rate assumption, investment earnings assumption, whatever you want to call it, this year, what was it, five times that I did that motion?
Yes. Yeah, there was a lot of debate over
Yes.
That.
We did read that we will see what happens with the new ordinance before we change it.
Correct.
Would it just be easier for us to change?
I don't have a problem with that, but as a board, we have to discuss if we are relinquishing fiduciary responsibility. If we're taking the dictation to tell us versus what our primary goal here as a board is to manage the money. Our primary objective here is to take care of the employee's money, the pension plan.
Yeah.
And you still have that duty.
Right. But what I'm saying is we're getting outside input.
Outside mandate.
Well, yes, mandate. You're right. And this is the only thing that we're having a board meeting about to see if we're okay with that, if that's palatable. And my thoughts are, why are we even here as a board then? Why do we come if they're going to deal with all that? They're really taking
Arnie, you still have dozens of responsibilities besides setting those. There's three assumptions that are dictated in the ordinance. You still are responsible for monitoring performance. You're still responsible for hiring investment consultant, actuary, attorney, auditor. You're still responsible for hiring investment manager. You're still responsible for disabilities. You're still responsible for benefit calculations. When you say that they're taking over all of it, it's really just...
I'm not saying they're taking over all of it, but if they're going to take one piece, what's going to prevent them from coming in and dictating something else?
There's actually a really good reason.
What's that?
Is that this particular assumption was necessary legally from the IRS qualification and from the state of Florida. This was necessary legally in order to adopt this kind of plan where there's a where the level of the contribution requirement may determine the level of the benefits. And anything that determines the level of benefits should be something that the elected officials decide. And the operation of the plan is something the pension board decides.
So I have a question. So you're saying that these three assumptions that were stated and mandated in that ordinance, but there are no other responsibilities that the board currently handles that the council can come back later and say, well, no, we want you to change this as well. Because those are the only three areas that affect the benefits?
Well, there are the other assumptions, the demographic assumptions, for example. The way the ordinance reads is that the board has the responsibility to do an experience study, I think no less frequently than once every 5 years. and to recommend assumption changes as a result of the experience, or retain them as a result of the experience study. And I'm going by recollection here, but I think the ordinance says that the city council, in its capacity as the manager of the benefit levels, has the authority to accept or reject the recommendation, but on the other demographic assumptions.
Isn't it really appetite for risk?
Excuse me?
Isn't it really appetite for risk?
Yeah, if this hadn't been proposed, you'd be in a plan where all the risk was borne by the participants.
I understand all you've been saying today, but it's something we, as you know, the board's been left out of this whole process. If the board wants to go into it, I'm obviously looking to these issues you raise. And I appreciate if you send your authority to back up what you're telling us.
My authority?
Yeah, your authority.
Is it report?
Internal revenue, the compliance with internal revenue. You made the statement that for this type of a plan, then the assumptions have to be within the purview of the sponsor. So those authority and support your opinion. Just to, get it going on if the board wants to. See where we end up. We're going to have to decide whether you want to proceed, and as you say, and as you know, we haven't been involved in the process, so the board's going to have to decide if you want to move forward with this.
As I started to say, this is why we're having a board meeting, to decide.
Which I think would include going to the state, maybe the IRS, reviewing Jim's position, and here we end up.
Yeah, and I concur. I feel that if this is a new trend set, then maybe it's time to find out if it's proper and if it makes sense and it's legal. Maybe we have to be the first ones to bear the expense to prove that it is going forward for everybody. We're helping set the path. Or maybe we're putting up the wall. I mean, to make people, legislators, think.
Do you know what the expense is going to be to go down this path?
We don't. Lee, is there any way we can do a not-to-exceed price from you?
No.
This is Bernie. If I could just throw this out, as the plan sponsor, I would think the plan sponsor would be interested in knowing whether their plan meets the requirements of the code to be a qualified plan. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it should be the city that bears the cost of it, not the plan.
I'm not going to speak on behalf of the city. What I suggest, if you want to do that, I suggest that you as a board vote on that and bring it forward to the city council for them to vote on that.
And again, Diane, some of the observations that I make
based on the fact
that I've been in this field since the 60s. So, and I understand Jim Rizzo talking about the private sector and the public sector, but again, I think we need to know that what the city, because it has implications. Obviously, the employer doesn't make much difference to a public employer because they don't write off the contribution, but the impact to the employee is that it's going to be compensation, taxable compensation. I think Lee,
And
I would say this also, I think maybe there needs to be better communication. And Lee has kind of alluded to that. There just needs to be better communication. But my feeling is if we need to go ahead and find out if this passes muster as a qualified plan, and that would be to get a letter, determination letter.
Lee, as far as better communication, do you think that we should consider placing the board placing their concerns and presenting them to the city and offering the city to pay for all these concerns? Or do you just want the board to authorize you to proceed and you will proceed?
Well, Artie did appear at one of the meetings and presented some of these issues on behalf of the board. Jim Lynn, I believe, were employed by the city to render advice and ultimately devise this plan. So that's the advice the city's already gotten.
you know I'm not an attorney, but and the city has had legal advice on this
right,
all along
yeah,
the way.
Did you work with anyone on it?
You know, my position, oh yeah, yes, he was the attorney advising the city on all the legal type matters.
Right, that's what I said. But so you... The city's gotten their advice from consultants they chose to hire, and it sounds to me like the board, if you're going to do anything, you want something independent.
I have a question. Mr. Russo, you said that you spoke with someone in Mr. Brinkman's office and got a clearance through discussions. Is there any way that you could get some type of written documentation from their office stating that they approve of the plan and this situation? And my second question is, when you were speaking with them, did you advise them that it would not be two separate plans where the existing plan is closed and that one it has this assumption rate and this other plan is the new plan and it has 7% assumption rate based on the benefits are based on? Do they realize that it's actually one plan and that by setting the assumption for the new portion, the new tier, you're also mandating the assumption on the old tier? Were they aware of that information when you were speaking with them?
Yeah, on your first question, I think that their normal process should produce a written, I mean, they already have a mission to declare this the state accepted or whatever they do. Maybe all they need is a nudge, because as we all know, sometimes that state accepted letter may not come as quickly as we all would like. So maybe they just need a nudge to put this at the top of their list to give their official approval, written approval on it. I also don't know if just the state accepted letter is you know, the typical letter that has the word state accepted there addresses all these other issues. I presume it would.
I was just going to say the state acceptance still doesn't address the internal revenue issues.
That's right.
Yeah, the division stays away from the federal and tax issues.
Absolutely right. On your second question is, in my discussions with them, by the way, this is the first time I've ever heard anyone think of this ordinance and this plan in terms of two different interest rates operating at the same time. And in my discussions with the state, that never came up. It was always one pool, one set of assumptions, one everything. It's one plan.
Sure, if you dictate to us to change the assumption rate on the existing plan.
But meanwhile, they've gotten their extra...
We only have one plan.
No, the new plan has not started yet. And the other thing that I say is as soon as it starts, it's unfunded, unless you're going to write off the existing plan. Do you follow my mindset
here?
We
have to stop calling it. We need to stop, all of us need to stop calling it two plans.
It's a different tier. But the different tier is unfunded because it's really
tiers
by itself.
Yeah, tier. We do tiers all the time, Arnie. And seldom do you ever do a new tier that operates as a separate plan.
Okay.
Seldom do you ever do a new tier that has its own funded ratio.
So have we amended the plan for the second tier? Don't you think we have to before we initiate the new plan?
No.
There's no new plan.
The new tier. Before we add a tier, we have to amend the existing plan.
And that's what was done a couple months ago.
What are you talking about, Arnie? What do you mean? What do you mean by that statement? We did an ordinance amendment.
What you're saying is that the first tier specified that the board dictated all the assumptions.
Right.
That tier needs to be addressed separately to change that wording so that the board no longer is in charge of those three items that they put in the new ordinance, so that when the second tier comes on board and the second tier tells all of it, it's all been changed. You follow me? Because the first part still states in writing that the board is responsible, which is where
it,
we feel...
It still states in writing where? So, which...
The pension plan.
I know, in the pension plan.
Well, you have the pension plan, right?
You're talking
about... I have a copy of the amendment, yeah.
You're talking about
the
ordinance, you're talking about the plan documents themselves?
Yes.
Okay. So we're trying to revise the plan documents
to
coincide
with the ordinance. You're changing the plan, there's going to be two tiers.
Yes, so you have to revise your plan documents to coincide with the ordinance.
As Jim said, these changes were made as an amendment to the existing plan.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But I think that's already been done by the ordinance.
Or we could look at a brief period of things submitted to the state. The actuarial statement, valuation that we got. The board at, setting the assumption rate for interest earnings at 8%. With the whole mouthful behind it. And now this comes and says 7, which, you know, they aren't all the same.
Right. But I thought this meeting was going to be a way to find a solution to all this, not to find a fight with the city. So I'm kind of surprised here, you know, coming to this meeting. I thought we were going to try to find a resolution.
We're trying to find an understanding. Yes.
Okay. All right.
But with, I'm surprised the state isn't standing there with one big question mark sign with the three things submitted. Rather,
it's a whole... Well, I think the whole reason that the state's not standing there is just my, and I've never been down this road before either, so it's not like I obviously had no push on this. I came in on the tail end just trying to implement it, but I think that it's a new territory for the state of Florida, new territory for the city of Ocala. I think we can either shine or we can end up fighting. So we have to figure out a way to make this either come to a resolution between all of us. When you talk about communication, you know, I think we all need to communicate better now.
You and I had a one-on-one, and what I'm extremely dissatisfied is how they're treating the plan. Because when they grandfathered people in, I explained
that... Well, what I'm saying is we can go over all this...
Our job is to take care of the plan.
I know.
Whether it takes a fight or not, our job is...
Well, then I guess your job as pension board members would be to submit a different ordinance change that you would recommend to go to council. Maybe.
No.
Isn't that where ordinance changes usually come? Is from here? You don't want to do that.
Say that's...
You just want to make sure IRS is in concurrence.
When I got on this board, there was a lot of acrimony. And I think the acrimony resulted some from the fact that I felt some of the board members were acting as employees.
Yes.
And so, you know, I, in a letter that went before city council that I worked with Arnie on, you know, I wanted to make it clear to the city that the board didn't represent the employees. It didn't represent the city. It represented the plan. And I think we're more on board of that concept now. That's the responsibility of this board to represent the plan.
Right.
The city, as sponsor, dictates what the plan is going to be. And where I'm coming from is, I just want to make sure this plan is a qualified plan.
Sure. Perfect. We can step back now. Jim and I can step back. If you have any questions, we can ask, and we can let you all continue. But we wanted to be here to answer questions if you had it, because a lot of times I don't have the answers as clearly as he does. So.
I mean, that sounds like a reasonable request.
I think that's a reasonable request.
And that would also be to the city's benefit.
Yeah, if it's not good.
Unless they needed a lot of money to do that. But it does seem very much appropriate to me, as being the newbie on this, that the city gets to set the benefit level.
And that's fine.
Irrespective of what is in the plan.
Right.
and then we say, okay, the number is 7.
How
are we
going to get there?
Yeah, how are we going to get to 7? But
and,
that, I mean, it's completely...
And is the plan, the way it's being crafted,
right.
a qualified plan?
Right, yeah, I agree with
from
that.
From a tax standpoint...
I would assume that would never have been presented if it could not meet that muster.
Well, you know, I'm not going to hop on Jim Rizzo now, but, you know, when that issue came back up again, when Lee threw it out, Jim kind of deferred. Yeah, Tallahassee's really not involved in that either. So the point is...
That sounds like, the city should be the one bearing the cost of ensuring it is a qualified plan, as opposed to the board.
Mm-hmm. In IRS ruling before they
act. Yeah. But I would have thought that would have been done.
Well, I think we're done. I mean, I think we have done that.
Okay,
so, right.
I asked
you
at a council meeting, and they said they did not do that.
Well, I don't know what it takes to demonstrate that we are a qualified plan.
I thought, give you a check mark on
that's
your
what
plan?
I'm saying. I think we are a qualified plan. Okay. I would not want the newspaper to be in this room saying we're not a qualified plan, because I don't know why we would consider us not being a qualified plan.
Well, I think we were a qualified plan. The question is, are we still a qualified plan?
I think we are. We're just a different type of qualified plan now, because we have a second tier in here.
Well, unfortunately, when you're dealing with the Internal Revenue Service, you know, you either have plans that are pre-approved, okay, what they call prototypes or master plans, or you have individually determined plans, then I would think this would fit in the most latter of the type.
Okay, so you're concerned that we're a qualified plan, number one. Okay.
To just get a determination letter, and maybe if this plan is in existence in Rhode Island or Wisconsin or wherever it is, you know, conceivably they got a determination letter. That's not that we can be bound. But that determination letter would not be binding on this plan. But, you know, if nobody's gotten one of these determination letters yet and it's a similar plan, I mean, you know, because the ramifications of this, again, to the city are, you know, city doesn't get a write-off for it, but the employee has it on a deferred basis, and the earnings are on a deferred basis. And all that goes out the window if this isn't a qualified plan.
Okay.
Right, in that regard, before going to the IRS, I would recommend that we first have the plan reviewed. We have some of the most well-respected tax attorneys in the country that work every day with the IRS, who we work with on tax matters. I would suggest that before we go to the IRS, we would have those attorneys, and I'm sure Jim's familiar with them, review the plan and give us an opinion before we open the door to the IRS, see what they have to say.
And Jim Lynn's not on the call, so he may have already done that and knows the answer and has the response. So.
I think Jim would tell you he's not a tax expert, just like I'm not a tax expert. Whether he consulted with any or not, I don't know.
Okay.
But that's I'm just recommending that we take that step before ourselves to the IRS.
And I feel bad that Jim Rizzo isn't on the phone anymore.
Oh, I don't know. He's not on the phone.
Or on the conference call.
Jim Rizzo's still here, right?
Yes.
Yes, he's still on the phone. I just said we were going to step back, because if we're doing all the talking, you guys can't deliberate.
The last comment that you had made it sound like he wasn't there anymore, didn't hear some of these concerns as Lee was expressing them.
Jim Lynn has not been available to make a call.
Can somebody...
I cut out for a couple minutes. I've been back.
Welcome back, Doug. Welcome back.
Thank you. I too would recommend, Diane, that the city get a determination letter. I think it's... Maybe you all can refresh my memory. It was rare... in varying degrees for governmental plans to get determination letters. We used to do them routinely years ago. So you may or may not, Lee, do you know whether the plan currently has a determination letter from back in the day?
Not to my knowledge, Jim. My knowledge.
And that's not uncommon. But I think it's think Jim Lynn can arrange, if his office, someone in his office doesn't do that kind of work, I'm sure he can arrange for that. But I think it's an important thing to get a determination, especially now that the IRS has gotten this new, you know, it's like they knocked on the government sector's door and said, gee, we're here to serve you. They called the government sector an underserved market. And we all just kind of said, yeah, we kind of like it that way. But they have a newfound interest in poking around the public sector world, and so it is indeed a good idea to get a determination letter.
The IRS is exactly right. They establish these teams of people for that purpose, and they call them cadres. That's their term.
Yeah. Is there any, can anybody just ask Jim Lynn if he talked to any of these tax attorney types? Yeah, we'll work with him.
Also, Doug, since you're back, was the impact statement to the council done with a 7% or an 8% assumption?
7 on everything.
7.
7.
Yeah.
That's the way you interpret it too, right?
Yes.
Yes, that was our reading, and I think we also, our office had a couple of calls with EDU and the actuary doing the work, you know, for matching purposes, and percent is the number that came out.
Yeah. Yeah, we I don't know if collaborate is the right word, but we certainly corroborated each other's final work product.
Okay. Yeah, and anything that I noticed in the actuarial impact statement on the ordinance, that anything that differed from what was done in the past is either bold or prior method and so forth, you know, it stands out as you look at it.
So if I can just surmise for my own benefit, it would seem that we were here today to perhaps deal with what could be a situation of the city by being able to dictate, as it's doing with these assumptions, that it might be a problem as far as that the plan would be legally, is the word you use, I'm going to use word from a tax standpoint, that it would affect its qualification.
Right.
And Lee seemed to speak in agreement to that, and Doug kind of also, and that might have been before Jim Rizzo got on the phone. And it was now going to be, do we as a board posit that we want our attorney to
look into the legal,
aspects of the plan?
That isn't, no, I thought it was much more that the city would
seek
and a state determination of the validity of the plan.
And where the conclusion that I come to is, I think that what we need to do is ask the plan sponsor to see if this plan is tax qualified based upon these changes.
So, and there's one more piece now that we're here, and that is that I signed a letter to the state actuary that we set an assumption rate at 8%, and are we all going to change that to 7% to match the variable rate?
Didn't you say that we were subject to any...
yeah, but we. I already signed a letter to 8%.
Yes,
but
that needs to go through the...
Arnie, this is Lee. I just want to be sure we know what letter you're talking about. Are you referring to the letter that we're required to do each year with each valuation report?
Yes.
To the state on the expected annual rate of return?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's different than the assumption rate. That statutory determination is the total expected annual rate of return for the three times. time period, tri-year, next several, long-term. That is, like the state looks to see, is your assumption reasonable in light of what you expect, but you were not telling them through that letter that's your assumed rate.
Well, I'm confused. I thought they were one and the same.
Okay. But when we went through the that process, and I remember that well.
Yeah.
Yes,
you ran out of breath several times.
Depending on.
Yeah, like I said, it was five times through, if I remember correctly. We also, I also added in there that this may be revised at a later date, depending on, because of all the stuff that was going on with pension at the time. In a nutshell. And is it time to revise the assumed rate of return? The letter that Arnie signed.
Yeah, well, that letter is done by an act every year with the received evaluation report. As far as your, which is again what you actually expect to earn, not what the assumption rate is, although there's a relationship there, that's why the state wants to see it. As far as your assumed rate of return, that's something that the board could visit from time to time as recommended by an investment consultant and or the actuary.
Okay, so we can change that at our next meeting and don't have to worry about it now.
Or we could change it now?
Yeah, I don't think that letter I expect what rate of return, Arnie, that was based on your consultant's advice or what they believe could actually be earned. I don't think you need to change that.
Okay, the time that the assumption rate is done, it would be like after an experience study. Or...
Experience study in conjunction with what the consultant's opinions are with respect to what they expect to be the future experience plan.
Okay. So that could be done at a meeting with everybody there.
We're here now.
Yes.
This is what really highlights, I think, why we're all here. Having such a long discussion, and I know it's not done after this meeting today, is consider this. I'm sorry, this is Doug. What happens at some point down the road when the consultant comes to the board and says, we aren't comfortable with 7%, we think 6.5% should be the way to go?
Yeah. I was wondering about it too.
You know, that is a good point.
What chain of events needs to, we know currently with every other plan in the state how it happens. How is it going to happen with the city of Ocala with the general plan?
I think what we're saying is, I think what has been stated is that, because if you go to 6.5%, that would have an effect on benefits. And so that's why we wanted to maintain this level consistency. But let's say it happens, I doubt whether it's going to happen quickly, but let's say it does happen in 2 or 3 years. 5 years from now, then maybe at that point we need to revisit the ordinance and revise the ordinance of the pension plan, you know, at that point.
This sets up some potential, you know, I as an actuary, I try to think different scenarios in the future.
Yes.
I can't imagine the state doesn't have some commentary on this. You know, we should pass this by Keith Brinkman and the reviewing actuary to say, hey, Keith, given the current statutory requirements, or setting assumptions and whose purview that is. What happens with Ocala when the consultant says it should be 6.5 and that's what the board declares, and yet you see a valuation the following year that uses 7%? What do you do, Keith, in reviewing actuary? Do you approve or disapprove?
That's a good question.
Who is Keith Franklin with?
Keith with Division.
Brinkman.
Brinkman.
Yeah.
Division of Retirement.
Yeah.
Okay. He's the Chief Division
He's
of Retirement.
The Grand
he is
of
the
Actuaries.
Division of Retirement.
Been there for a long time.
Yeah.
Get ready.
Did they give guidance on stuff like that?
Well, again,
like they should.
Well, again, we're burying new ground. We've never been down this road before. Because typically, if you want to change the 6.5%, the board does that.
Yeah.
They do it at this level. And now we're at a whole new level.
So
I just feel like that's a decision that'll probably come down the pike at some point. But do we have to attack it today? I mean, you know, we're going to have to change the ordinance if we're going to make a change to the 7%. So I don't know. Maybe you want to talk to Keith about it, Doug, straight up, or you want us to call him?
Well, you know, I'm trying to get extra meetings going on here, but I think it's a conversation that needs to be had with me included, but not solely.
Yeah, probably you and Rizzo together would be a great...
Well, I would also suggest a city representative and a board representative and probably Lee.
Right.
This is nowhere near being resolved, I don't think.
So what I'm hearing is that we need direction from Mr. Brinkman's office that these actuarial assessments being determined by the ordinance are valid, as well as a ruling from the IRS stating that it's a qualified plan for IRS 401 Section A purposes. Is that correct?
Yes, this is Lee. I would say that is correct. But again, as Jim mentioned, the CFA writer Jim Lynn's firm is a tax expert in this area. It's not, as they say, we have a firm that we work with frequently, but we first have an evaluation done and an opinion rendered by a tax expert, and then apply in this circumstance for the qualification, the determination letter. And I think Jim roughly stated the same thing.
If the board wishes, I mean, Lisa works in my office, so it's probably very easy for us to get together. It would save a little bit of logistics, but that's your call, not mine, so. She definitely understands the concept. Then we could coordinate with the others.
Lee and Doug, how about some guidance? Where should we go from here?
Well,
give us some suggested motion.
I think that there has to be a discussion with the state side, with Keith Franklin and folks in the division, discuss the issues with them that are state issues. As mentioned, they're not going to get involved in the federal. And then have an evaluation made by a tax expert and with an eye towards applying for a favorable determination letter subsequent to that.
Do you have a tax expert?
I think the first two things is to get with the division number one and number two, have the plan reviewed by a qualified tax person.
Should you get Jim Lynn to go on that side?
Does he have a qualified tax person?
Lee, do you have someone who's qualified on the tax side of things that you could recommend?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mentioned already, we don't have our firm, but we frequently work with a firm. And individuals in the firm are very well respected nationally, work with the IRS frequently, and I'm sure Jim's familiar with the firm at Place Miller out of Indianapolis. And we work on tax issues, we work with them on a regular basis.
Well, I think we're going to ask Diane to get with Jim Lynn, since we really think the sponsor should make sure the plan is qualified. Yes. So Diane's asking for a name so she can get with Jim Lynn to go work on that side of things.
Or has he already...
He may have already done it, yes. That's
yeah,
true.
He's just not on the call. Yes,
you
know,
well, you look at that room, why don't you check with Jim? I don't know if there's what kind of tax people, if any, Jim's firm has. But get with him first and ask him if there's any qualified tax folks in his firm to do the analysis. Or if not, then he can give me a call and he knows the people that we work with, and he and I can discuss it.
Well, what I was saying is the unknown is if Jim Lynn talked to any tax people.
Yes.
I mean, that's one of the big unknowns.
And
yeah, well, that's why I thought when he's contacted, I, you know, need to ask him that. And if not, if you've got tax people in his firm.
And from your perspective, the getting with Keith Brinkman at the state, isn't the typical when you send an actuarial report up and an ordinance change up to the state, you never really hear anything back from them? It's just considered submitted and all is well.
Except if it's not
good. At some point you will get, as I think Jim mentioned earlier, at some point you would get
does that typically take?
But that's essentially all it says is it's being accepted. Now, if they've got problems with it, they'll specify what the problems
so,
are.
So my question is, do they rubber stamp it, or do they really assess it?
They'll assess it, but I'm saying we've already gotten a state-accepted letter, so the state has already accepted it, but what that means is...
No, they just said they acknowledged they received it.
That's right.
That didn't mean they accepted it.
And typically, you don't... How often would you say you get a response back from the state that says, this doesn't work, we don't like it, or... Basically never, right?
I'll go with you answer that one. Okay, well... Typically, I think they do a high-level review on it, and if they have a concern that they don't think it will be state-accepted, they'll let you know fairly quickly. We've had that this year for a couple of plans that have closed where the investment assumption was not lowered, where we got an immediate response.
Okay,
so... Absence of immediate response, it generally is lumped in with the review of perhaps the next valuation report.
So I understand us. Go ahead.
That being said, I think that they probably gave a high-level review to it and nothing jumped out, but because we don't have a definitive answer, I think it's worth asking.
Okay. I don't mind, but my thought is, you know, if they would have had a question, they would have immediately kicked it out and started asking us those questions, and it's been 2 months that they've had it. Right?
And it wasn't like it was they just put it in a pile. I mean, they know.
I mean, they knew we were coming.
We have that conference call, about an hour-long conference call. So, you know, when it came in the day's mail, I don't know if it, you know, suddenly piqued somebody's interest and said, oh, now this one needs some special attention here. I mean, I'm sure they give everything special attention, but this one really needs it.
And the other question we have, Doug, is when you talk about we would recommend an assumption rate of 6.5%, if we know it's 7 and that these three assumptions are cut in stone, we could recommend a change to one of the other assumption rates. The board can vote on that all day long and that could happen. Why would we recommend a change to the 6.5? From the 7 to the 6.5?
Well, I just gave an example of some point in the future, as the plan becomes more cash flow negative, when your consultant comes to you and says, given the amount of money we need on hand for payment of benefits each month, we need to change our asset allocation, and we only think we can get 6.5, and the board under advisement from the consultant says, well, let's declare 6.5. And sends that letter to the state annually, okay? As Lee said, it's not the same as the declaration of the assumption, but they're linked. The state wants to see if there's a relationship between required letter each year and how the plan is being funded.
So in that letter, could you not state that although we realize and expect to only receive 6.5%, the 7% has been dictated to us by ordinance, therefore we are going to reduce this assumption rate to get us in compliance with our projections for
them? Well, certainly. I imagine there's a number of different solution scenarios. I think while this is all a hot topic right now, we start thinking about laying this out to the state so they can really think about what's being done in Ocala since it's cutting edge.
Yes, okay. All right, I'm with you.
This is unrelated and unrelated. Didn't Orlando have some kind of, I'm going to have to say, wacko pension plan start hybrid and, you know, I remember.
Are you calling us wacko?
No.
Just a plan, not you.
Really innovative plan a number of years ago.
I don't know. Jim Rizzo, do you know anything about Orlando having a different plan type of?
I don't know. Orlando is the general employees plan is a client of ours, but it's handled out of another office, so I'm not real familiar with it.
Okay, I remember Mickey Miller talking about that at FGFOA a number of years ago, like I said.
Yeah, Mickey's been gone from Orlando for about 10, so yeah.
Long time ago.
Orlando's hybrid and, you know.
Yeah, they used to be pretty conservative.
Very innovative.
Innovative, yeah. Okay.
As opposed to WACO.
Anything else, Doug, we need to work on?
Not at the moment, nothing comes to me.
Okay. Well, I can only apologize.
Yeah, I think bottom line, as we said, two things. Get together with the division and check with Jim Lynn on the tax status and whether it's been reviewed by an appropriate tax expert or not. And if so, that's something that I think should be done. I believe I heard Jim do that earlier.
This is Jim Lynn.
Oh.
I just got on.
Well, we're done. Thanks, Jim. No, I'm serious. I'm kidding. Have you sent any kind of letter to any qualifying IRS person relating to whether this is a qualified plan?
Oh, no. No, I have not.
Okay.
And I think that, Lee, what is the status of is this in the voluntary compliance process, or?
No, to my knowledge, Jim, as we discussed earlier, this plan has not gotten a favorable determination letter, and my recommendation was, if it hadn't been done, to at least have a qualified tax attorney review these amendments for their opinion, and then subsequent to that, file for the favorable determination. I think Jim Rizzo and I jointly agreed on that.
Yeah, Jim, a little earlier, a little earlier, I think the next step was identified as that the plan sponsor, city, would reach out to you in your office and go back into the recent history of your advice concerning the IRS qualification and then arrange for determination letter, and I'm sure in that process Lee should probably be in the loop to review the package. I think that's what was suggested.
We'll get another thing going, Jim Lynn. If it's not been done, we'll take direction from the board through city manager and determine how to handle this.
Okay. All right,
and I suggest that the board write us a memo if you guys don't mind. I think that would be the best way to document, if that could be easier. Is that okay?
Yep. Are we all done with everybody on the phone?
Well, you got Lee.
I would ask with regard to Lee, the thing about getting hold of the division in Tallahassee, who would you suggest be those getting a hold of the division?
I would recommend that certainly Doug and I be involved in that.
Yeah.
Are you available this afternoon?
No.
Okay.
Neither am I.
No.
Doug, would you like to coordinate that, though, with Mr. Brinkman and just tell us when we need to be there, or you want us to coordinate it?
I don't think it really matters who coordinates it.
And just send some dates around to everybody.
Yeah.
Maybe you
went
on the board.
You know, and after Doug and I initially spoke with Keith Brinkman, it may be that we want to, get Jim Rizzo, Jim Lynn involved in that discussion as well.
Oh, okay. You want to just talk to him straight up, just have them talk to him, or you want us on the phone?
Yeah, I'm guessing Keith is going to want to hear from everybody.
I think it's going to be more... save time if we all are on the phone together.
So Jim and Jim, Doug and Lee, and the city?
And somebody from your board.
Oh, somebody from the city and somebody from
I think you should have somebody from your board. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a good idea. If I'm going to be there, I think somebody from your board should be there.
Mm-hmm. And you'll be the city, probably be the city representative.
She is the CFO. Hello.
That's okay. I mean,
keep saying the city.
That's right. You can dictate that. He'll probably pass it to me.
Who knows? Ken may want to.
You know where the buck stops.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I have knowledge of pensions. So I hope you can see that. You know what I'm talking about.
It always helps.
Yeah, I fortunately worked for three cities that had pension plans.
So...
recipient of a closed plan, so I know how that feels.
So do we make a motion to ask that there be a conference of all of the players with Mr. Brinkman of the Division of Retirement?
Yes.
Okay. With regard to the plan as...
the new tier of the plan.
The plan as being, per right. the new order.
Being a qualified plan.
Anyone second that?
I can second it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Do we do a motion requesting the city check into the tax qualification through independent tax counsel?
Yes, you
can. We should do that in the form of a motion. I would propose that we ask the city to engage tax counsel with regard to their opinion on the tax qualification of the plan pursuant to the most recent ordinance amending the plan.
Getting us a letter that it's fully qualified?
Not yet.
No,
I think that would be...
Well, that's what we're
the
giving
third,
her.
I think you want to vote on that first, that you yep. think that that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. First of all, vote on that.
From a qualified tax attorney?
Right, right.
Independent.
Okay. Independent. Yeah. And that attorney could be recommended by our attorney because he knows one.
Or Jim Reeser.
It could be any. I think yeah, we'll, yeah. they'll be in conjunction with yeah. the decision.
Second.
Aye.
All those four, aye.
Aye.
Okay. And the third one?
And the last would be a motion, depending upon the result of the discussion of the earlier motion about the about tax counsel's opinion of the plan as it stands now. To request a determination letter from the Internal Revenue Service if tax counsel feels the plan as or the ordinance as currently written could result in a favorable determination letter.
I'm not sure of the difference.
Well, this is Jim Lynn. If you don't have a determination letter as of yet, which is what I heard, I thought before, you probably want to get a determination letter in any event.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't think we want to go there before we have tax counsel
right.
say that.
Yeah, well,
we've
already decided that. Right?
Yeah. That's the point I'm trying to make. After that.
Yeah, if tax counsel says yeah, it looks like it's okay, then.
Proceed with
then
a determination
proceed.
Letter.
But if they don't, then it's
back for the city to, I guess,
well,
deal with.
I don't know. I mean, Jim Lynn, if tax counsel would say this is not a qualified plan, don't we want the determination straight up from IRS that it's not a qualified plan, or just that tax counsel?
Well, normally it's all kind of part of a process where first the council reviews the plan. Leadinger's been through it a number of times, and then there's a process to get determination from IRS as part of that that usually involves plan amendments. Sometimes the tax counsel might say, you know, you probably should change this mm-hmm. sentence or this paragraph before you send it to the IRS.
And that's
after the IRS gets it, they may come back and say, well, you know, this paragraph or this thing. There may be amendments in the process, but the first step, of course, is to get tax counsel to review it and then go from there.
Yeah. That's basically what we were saying.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. If tax counsel says, there's a lot of work that needs to be done here, we're not going to send it to IRS as is, you know.
Well, I think it could just be a third motion. Seek a determination letter from the Internal Revenue Service at the conclusion of the review by tax council.
Okay.
Did we vote on that one yet?
Second.
Yeah, second.
All those four?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, so who is going to be on the all those involved meeting on the phone with Brinkman?
Everyone. CFO, Jim and Jim, Doug and Lee, and
all of us?
And somebody from the board.
Okay. You want somebody or you want all the board?
Say what?
We're here as a board. Do we want somebody to represent us or all of us?
Is it just to hear about the validity of it?
Yes.
I think it just needs more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because otherwise you'd have to call another board member.
Yeah. Who's going to arrange that meeting? Doug?
I think he's up for
it. I think anybody could, but you know, that would be me sort of acting like plan administrator and reaching out to see whose schedules are available.
Alicia?
I mean, that might be a little expensive proposition to have me on the clock doing that.
I understand, appreciate, Doug. Alicia will take care of coordinating this. Hey, Lee, before we hang up with you, Dale needs you to call him. Dale, over at OPD.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so don't forget as we hang up that you got to give him a call. He's waiting. He needs to talk to you today.
Lee, this is Jim Lynn. I need to talk to you today on an unrelated matter.
I hope he's writing this stuff down, you know?
I did try to catch up with you yesterday, Jim. I left you a message. I don't know if you got it or not. But I'm going into a meeting shortly that I think will be concluded by...
these minutes won't be able to...
4 o'clock or so. So, Jim, if you try me on my cell phone, hopefully I'll be free then.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
The matter came up about changing the assumption rate.
Yes.
You know...
Are you talking about in the ordinance?
Talking about...
the expected rate of return.
Yeah, so why don't we let them go? This is a board subject matter. We don't need them right now for this.
Thank you. Bye.
Gentlemen, thank you for your time. We will be in touch.
All right, Ernie.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, what's left of it.
Yep. Take care. Good day, everybody.
There's a lot of hours left in the day. Be positive, Ernie.
not these guys are committed to meetings. You know, meetings can consume your whole day.
Nothing happened.
Did this happen
yet?
Yeah,
I'm saying.
You got it?
Yeah.
You're here till 4.
No, I have a meeting at 4.
Yeah, but they're charged us by the hour.
I know, that's a good idea.
So, I just wanted to get
I like your way of thinking
so,
on it.
So, really...
Now, who's
going to
be the board? Will it be you, Ernie?
I will go if it happens within the next week.
Okay.
Then I'm gone for 2 weeks. Then I'm back for a week. Then I'm gone for another 2.
Yeah, we need to make it happen. I think you need to make it happen.
So, what do you talk about?
Well, I'm trying to prepare myself for retirement, you know.
Well, I'm retired and don't let this move. Yeah.
Well,
you need to come to my house.
I have no responsibilities anymore.
If you're not available, who should do you?
If not, then Lisa.
Lisa, okay.
Right. Since she's here, it just makes it easier for all of us.
If you guys are okay with that, I think that's
yeah, no, sense. I think that's
Lisa's
fine.
Got a good handle.
As long as you don't boss her around.
I won't. I promise. Do I do that when it comes to pension issues?
No, you don't.
We don't even talk about pension in the office, do we?
No.
Uh-uh.
We don't.
Uh-uh. That's great. Okay, so you want to talk about a new letter or let it ride? I mean, what Doug stated as of October 1st, then he has a real number that he can work off of because we don't know how many people are going to be leaving the plan and taking their money with them.
Yeah.
Right. And we know there are a few. So why don't we just wait until we get that new number since we're only talking 1%. But well, I had to have us all together to make all these decisions.
Yeah.
And not that I'm trying to totally take on a fight, but you know, it's not like I didn't offer, Diana, it's not like I didn't offer that if they came to us first, we could have probably reduced the benefits
well,
to save the plan.
Well, let me just tell you this, Arnie. I've been in this business for 27 years, and when you're working with counsel, you say what you say, you be honest, you be open, and they make the decisions, we live with it. I'm sorry, but maybe I'm too, you know. Keep fighting. I like your fight spirit. Thank you.
Well, it seems to be a contradiction, you know.
Well, that's okay. I don't mind. You know, I don't mind fights. That's why I'm here to help. You know, I'm not here to boss. I'm here to help. So, anyway. But.
And auditors get to have fun this year with the new ordinance, too.
Do what?
Auditors.
No. Yeah, you know what? They don't have to look at the new ordinance this year.
No, it's next year.
It doesn't actually affect anything.
But it was, they would need to get a copy because it's an ordinance.
Yeah, they'll get a copy of it, but they don't have to opine on it.
It's October 1st.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's all next year.
Yeah.
It's next year, but past this year.
They'll just have it on their radar screen. Okay.
So I make a motion that we adjourn.
I'll second that.
Yeah.
I think I've made all the motions today.
Good, he did.
Bernie, I'm
going to go. That's why I remember you, Bernie, because you're in the mix. Good job, Arnie.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you, man.
Very good.